came of age, my mother called me to her side. She said, son, you're growing up now, pretty soon you'll take a bride. And then she said, just because you become a young man now, there's still some things that you don't understand now. Before you ask some girl for a hand now, keep your freedom for as long as you can now. My mama told me, you better shop around.
Welcome to Great Minds for this extraordinary episode with the one and only Smokey Robinson. If we were to introduce you, Smokey, with all your honors, it would take up all the time we have. I'll start by just saying a line, which is actually something I read off of your site, that Bob Dylan called you America's greatest living poet and the author of more than 4,000 songs. I can't think of someone I'd love to talk to more than you, Smokey, so a most heartfelt welcome.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you doing this.
So, Smokey, I thought we might start by talking about your Uncle Claude. Okay. And just give the ball to you right there.
Well, my Uncle Claude was also my godfather. He was a great man. I loved him very much. We were very, very close. When I was a baby, my mom and dad were in the hospital at the same time. My dad had his appendix out. My mom was there for something. I forgot what it was. But anyway, my Uncle Claude and my Aunt Beulah kept me for a while, from the time I was about a year old till I was about a year and 3-4 months old, you know. And my Uncle Claude and I were very close. And when I got to be about 3 or 4 years old, he would take me to the movies. And I loved cowboys. Cowboys, if you asked me at that point in my life what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would tell you a cowboy. I loved cowboys, and especially the ones who sang, like Roy Rogers and Gene Autry and those guys who had guitars and sang and all. I loved them. So my Uncle Claude adapted a cowboy name for me, which was Smokey Joe. Okay, that was his cowboy name. And whenever anybody asked me what my name was at that point in my life, I would tell them Smokey Joe. My Uncle Claude said, my name is Smokey Joe, so I'm Smokey Joe. I'm a cowboy, I'm Smokey Joe. And so people started to call me that. And when I got to be about 12 years old, they dropped the Joe off and I just became Smokey. And I tell people that, when I tell people that story, you know, they think that Smokey Robinson was a show business name that I adapted, you know. But no, I've been Smokey since I was 3 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
That's where the name came from.
What an incredible story. So I want to jump around a lot because there's so much ground to cover. But can we sort of trace the journey of the Five Chimes to the Matadors to the Miracles?
Well, the Five Chimes, there were a bunch of groups in the neighborhood that I grew up in. I grew up in the hood in Detroit, really. And there were groups everywhere, you know. And so we formed a singing group. Some of my friends and I got together when I was 11 years old and formed a singing group. And we had to pick a name for ourselves. So we called ourselves the Five Chimes because we thought chimes make a wonderful musical sound. So we were the Five Chimes, okay? And then after a while, a couple of the guys left the group. And because we were just in school, we weren't really doing anything professionally or anything like that. And the hopes of us ever doing anything professionally, especially in that neighborhood, were very bleak. So anyway, a couple of guys quit and we got new guys. And then eventually we named ourselves the Matadors because we thought that was exotic. We thought that, oh, that's an exotic name, the Matadors. So we became the Matadors. And then when we graduated from high school, there were a lot of groups and groupettes in Detroit at the time. And one of the guys who was in our group, the Matadors, Sonny, he, when we graduated from high school, he wanted to go to the Army. So his parents signed for him to go to the Army. However, he had a sister. And she was in a group called the Matadorettes, which was the sister group to our group. And to give you another example of that, at that time, the Temptations were called the Primes. And the Supremes were called the Primettes. So that's what was going on in Detroit. Anyway, we took Claudette to an audition. Jackie Wilson was my number one singing idol at that time. And his managers were in town talent scouting because Jackie was from Detroit. And we went to the audition and we took Claudette with us. To make a long story short, that's where I met Berry Gordy. This was way before he started Motown. And when we finally recorded our first record, he thought that the name The Matadors didn't fit us because we had a girl in the group. So we put a bunch of names in a hat and shook it around. And it just so happens that I put the name The Miracles in there, and we let Claudette pick the name out of the hat, blindfolded, and it was The Miracles. And that's how we became The Miracles, because we needed a girl or a name that would fit a girl in a boys group for our first record.
And you talk about Detroit and where you grew up, and you had a pretty interesting neighbor on Belmont, Aretha Franklin.
No, Aretha Franklin lived on Boston Boulevard, which was around the corner from Belmont.
Oh, okay.
Diana
okay.
Ross lived right down, Diana Ross lived 4 doors down the street from me now on
okay.
Belmont. But Aretha lived on the affluent neighborhood. Her father was a big time preacher, and you know, they had money. So right smack dab in the middle of the hood, in the middle of the ghetto, were two blocks where affluent people lived on those blocks. They were plush, they had grass, they had little islands in the middle of the streets and stuff like that. All the houses were big and mansion type homes and all that. And they were right in the middle of the ghetto. It was amazing. But anyway, Aretha grew up on Boston Boulevard, which was one of those streets, because her father had money, but it was right around the corner. And we played together many, 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 many days. Cool. Yeah, I've known Aretha since I was 8 years old.
Oh my goodness. And I guess one of the most famous failed auditions was when Decca Records passed on the Beatles. Right alongside that, you could argue that when Brunswick Records passed on the Miracles and you ended up with Tamla, which of course became Motown, that was probably the second most famous mistake by a record company.
Well, I don't know about that, but it sure was a God day for us. I tell everybody, it was a God day. Because, you know, for Barry to be at that audition that we went to just to turn in some new songs to Jackie Wilson, because he had written all his songs for Jackie Wilson at that time, for him to be there and to like a couple of my songs and to come out afterwards, and, you know, because Jackie Wilson's managers didn't like us because we were what they thought a youthful image of the Platters. And the Platters were out there, and they had a girl in their group, and the lead singer sang high like me, you know. So they thought we'd never make it because we were too much like the Platters. Anyway, Barry came out after the audition and spoke to me and asked me where we got the songs, because we sang songs that I had written rather than songs that were currently popular by other artists. And that's how Barry and I struck up a conversation, and it was a God day. So, and you know, he recorded us, and we were with a couple other record labels before he started Motown. And then, you know, nobody was paying, so he decided to start Motown, thank God.
And Shop Around, that became the first big hit?
That was the first million seller. That was the first million seller we ever had at Motown. And I once again, I thank Barry Gordy for that, because I had originally written Shop Around for an artist named Barrett Strong that we had. And he had a song called Money, That's What I Want. The best things in life are free, that song. And Barry wanted me to do an album on him. So I wrote Shop Around for him. And when I sang it to Barry, Barry said, no, I want you to sing this song. And I said, no, Barry, no, you. Anyway, he finally said, go into the studio and record it on You and the Miracles, man, which I did. And I recorded it slow and bluesy, like I thought Barrett Strong would have sang it. And the record was out for about 2 weeks on the radio. And one morning at 3 o'clock in the morning, my phone rings and it's Barry on the other line telling me to get the group together because we're going to re-record Shop Around. He's going to change the beat and the sound and the feeling and all that. And it's going to number one. And so I said, okay, I'll see you tomorrow. He said, no, I mean right now. So we re-recorded that song at 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, and he changed everything. And it did exactly what he said it was going to do.
Oh, my goodness. What a story. Years ago, I was lucky enough to go to Hitsville. And I think a lot of folks don't know, you know, what an extraordinary place that was. And not only was it where you did all your recording and how they created the Motown sound, and that it was also where Berry Gordy lived.
Yeah, he lived at Hitsville upstairs for a while, you know, until we started making enough money for him to get his own apartment.
Right.
Yeah.
And Smokey, somewhere along the line, you sort of evolved from not only being a great singer, and of course you had long been a songwriter, but writing a lot of songs and producing for so many of the other iconic Motown acts, and your eye for talent was unmatched. I loved how they portrayed you in the Broadway show Ain't Too Proud that ran for a while, and the seminal role you played in so many careers. That evolution from a singer and songwriter to talent, producing, and working so many other artists, that happened relatively quickly also at Motown.
Yeah, it did for me. You know, like I said, I was with Barry. Barry is my best friend even today, you know. And so I was with him from the outset, and I was the only artist that he allowed to produce themselves and to produce records on other artists at that time, because we were fledgling and we were new, and so he trusted me with that job, I guess. And I was the only one who did that for a while. And then, you know, Stevie started to produce himself, and Marvin and all that, thank God, because they were wonderful producers of themselves. And Marvin produced a lot, so did Stevie produce a lot of the other artists also. But I was the first one who was allowed to do that.
Incredible. And you mentioned Jackie Wilson, and there are so many iconic names who don't get talked about enough. It's one of the things I love about your channel and everything you do on Smokey Soul Town on Sirius XM, because you talk about all of these artists, you tell stories. I love when you had Martha Reeves on fairly recently and we're talking with Martha. But I'd love to talk a little about Jackie and another singer who's a favorite of mine who also doesn't get talked about very much, not a Motown artist, but Sam Cooke.
Come out here on the floor. Let's rock some more. You have no fear. Put your hands on your hip and let your backbone slip and work out. Ah, my mama, move up.
First step.
Honey, move back.
Second step.
Shuffle to the left.
Third step.
Wobble to the right.
Well, Jackie Wilson was my number one singing idol as a kid growing up. You know, he was dynamic, and he was from Detroit. And he was just the man. I cannot tell you, I would have gone anywhere to see Jackie Wilson within walking distance if it was 10 miles, you know, because he was the man. And I had a few guys who I really, as singers, kind of idolized because they were just great singers as far as I'm concerned. And Sam Cooke was one of those also. And I had known of Sam because Aretha Franklin, who was my childhood friend, like I said, I've known her since I was 8 years old. And her father had one of the biggest churches in Detroit, and all of the gospel acts used to come to his church to perform. And Sam Cooke at that time was with a gospel group called the Soul Stirrers. And when the Soul Stirrers came to Reverend Franklin's church, you would have thought any day that they were there, you would have thought it was Easter Sunday. See, because people go to church on Easter Sunday, they come out to celebrate, especially the women, you know. And there would be women around two blocks, five deep, to go and see the Soul Stirrers because Sam was there. And Sam has that unique Sam Cooke voice. He had just a wonderful gospel sounding voice. And so he was one of my favorites also. Then there was a guy named Clyde McFadder. Clyde McFadder, when I first saw him, there was a guy named Billy Ward who had a group called the Dominoes. And they came to Detroit to perform. I had to be about 11 or 10 at the time, and my sister took me to see them. And Clyde McFadder was the lead singer at that time for that group. And eventually he left, and Jackie Wilson actually took his place in the Dominoes before he became a solo artist. And so Clyde was one. And then there was a group in Detroit called the Diablos. And their lead singer was a guy named Nolan Strong. And he was an awesome singer, so I loved him too. And then the first time I ever saw anybody that made me think it's possible that I could properly be in show business was Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. They had a song called Why Do Fools Fall in Love?
Of course.
And the performance theater in Detroit at the time was a theater called the Broadway Capitol. And the Teenagers came to the Broadway Capitol. And at that time, Frankie Lyman had to be about no more than 14 years old, and I was probably 12 or 13. And I saw them, and they were performing. They were teenagers like us. And they were on stage, and that made me say, oh, well, maybe it is possible to be on stage, you know. And then there was Ray Charles. And Ray Charles was also, he had that gospel vibe to his voice. And I always loved Ray Charles's voice. So those are my five singing idols as a kid growing up.
Oh, what a group that is. So early days, I guess it was first called the Motortown and then shortened to the Motown Review, you and so many of the other artists used to go on these barnstorming tours, and you worked really, really hard, I'm gonna guess, for not a whole lot of money. And it was groups like the Marvelettes and Barrett Strong, who you mentioned, and the Contours, and of course, the Temps and the Four Tops and Marvin Gaye and Gladys Knight, on and on and on. Can you go back to those early days, Smokey, riding on that Motown Review bus and going from town to town? I'm guessing you were doing shows 5, 6, 7 nights a week, not necessarily staying in good hotels. That was a different time in America. We still have our challenges here, clearly, but in certain parts of the country, I'm sure that things were a little tough for you.
Well, yeah, especially when you got below the Mason-Dixon line, you know, it was rough. It was really rough, but you know, I thank God that we were all young. I do. I thank God that we were all young kids, and our main thought at that time was we're singing. We're going out and we're performing at places and we're singing. And we're singing because we also have recordings out. And so we were all very, very happy about that situation. However, the conditions sometimes were horrible, because especially in some of the places in the South, you couldn't stay in any named hotels. When we got to towns, we would have to go to the black side of town and stay in rooming houses, because the hotels would not allow you to stay in them. And we'd go to the black side of town and find rooming houses and stay in the rooming houses. And sometimes we'd get to towns, whereas, like if you were married, I was married when I was 19, man, to Claudette, who was the girl in the Miracles. And some of the guys on the road were married. And if your wife was with you, many times, and not only the fact that if your wife was with you, but even the girls on the tour, many times these rooming houses would not allow you to be unisex. The guys would have to stay in one rooming house down the street or across the way or something like that from the rooming house that the girls stayed in. And the conditions were rough. Going to the restaurants and them not wanting to serve you and doing the marches and things like that, it was rough. But like I said, thank God we were young and we wanted what we were doing. We loved what we were doing. So those conditions were very kind of secondary in our minds, even though we lived them. And they were crucial times too. And I really thank God for people like Dr. Martin Luther King and Reverend Ralph Abernathy and those guys like that. And especially for Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks, as far as I'm concerned, was the catalyst to the civil rights movement. So I thank God for her.
I'm so glad you mentioned all of them. And Smokey, I know you have just a little bit of time left, I hope, but the longevity of the careers and the music, you know, I'm constantly on your Soul Town station, which is such a gift, but the songs, many of which you wrote for the Temptations, for all these wonderful groups, is there something in particular? You had a recipe, and, you know, later joined by other great songwriters, the Holland Dozier Holland team and Norman Whitfield and Barrett Strong. Is there something that you can, you know, when you look back in your memory, say, we nailed something that kind of nobody else has figured out, Smokey, the longevity, the quality and the quantity of what was produced in that era and how it still all lives today? I know you just had a huge show out in LA, with you and Diana Ross and so many other great artists. You know, the fans, we still all love that music just as much today in 2024 as when it was recorded all those years ago.
Well, you know, people have asked me many, many times, sort of similarly to what you just asked me. They wanted to know why there were so many great artists at Motown and where'd all the talent come from in Detroit and all that. My answer to them is a two-word thing, Berry Gordy. We had a great leader. We had a leader who was a teacher. He was there mentoring us and teaching us. When I first met Berry, I had a loose-leaf notebook of 100 songs. Only two of them made sense all the way through. When I first met him that day, I must have sang 20 of them to him. And he never once said, okay, man, I'm tired, I gotta go, because I met him at the Jackie Wilson audition thing. And he never said that, you know. He just listened to them and critiqued them. So he was a great teacher for all of us. He was a great mentor for all of us. And on the first day of Motown, there were five people there. There was Barry, his then wife, a lady named Ray Noma, a lady named Janie Bradford, who became one of our top writers, Brian Holland of Holland Dozier Holland fame, and me. And he sat us down. He said, I'm going to start my own record company because nobody is paying. I'm going to start my own record company, and we are not just going to make black music. We're going to make music for everybody. We're going to make music for the world. We're going to make music, and we're going to always have some great stories. We're going to concentrate on our lyrical thing, and we're going to have some great beats, and this is going to be our formula. And that's what we set out to do, and thank God I think we accomplished it.
Oh, you sure did. As we wrap, Smokey, we just saw you recently perform, still brilliant, out touring. You're still going strong. Still love it just as much. What keeps you going now? You could kick your heels back. You got a winery. You got a beautiful family. You still love to do it, and we still love to see you.
Well, thank you. I tried retiring one time when we first moved Motown from Detroit to Los Angeles. I tried retiring, and I was retired for probably about 3 years from show business. And at the end of that 3 years, I was climbing the walls. Barry actually put me out. He put me out of my office, put me out of the company. He said, get out of here and go do your thing, which I really am happy about. But I can't find anything that replaces this for me. There's a feeling that I get from doing this that I don't get anywhere else in my life. So I'm going to be the George Burns of this end of show business.
And thank God. Well, Smokey, I can't thank you enough. It was an absolute joy to talk to you. I'm such an enormous fan of all your work and all that you've written that others have recorded. And may God bless you with many, many more good years of health. And I, again, thank you for giving us the gift, fans of Smokey Soultown, which is just the best.
Well, I appreciate you doing this. Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless, Smokey.